there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 299, which is so insane. Next week, episode number 300. And we have such amazing things in store for you and amazing things on this week's episode. But first, if you want to get in touch with us, drop us a line. Send an email on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is thisshowisogay. And of course, stroll on over to the Facebook. Type in thisshowisogay. Like us, because we sure as heck like you. Oh my gosh, one of my favorite people in the whole wide world is with us on this week's show. Dr. Frankie is the creator of Little Gay Book, a matchmaking service for lesbians and bisexual women. Her area of expertise is finding love for single lesbians, as well as dating and couples counseling. She is an insider in the lesbian community and understands the challenges in meeting high-quality, professional, emotionally available women. They are out there who are also interested in a committed relationship. I'm telling you, one of my favorite people. I consider her to be a sister of mine. It's not just the same age, New Jersey. It's the whole thing. Dr. Frankie, welcome back to This Show Is So Gay.
Hello, Ken. I'm so excited to be back on.
It's been a year and a half.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
That's a long time.
It's a long time. We had so many listeners submit questions, and they're such fun questions and some very serious questions as well. But first, can we talk about you for a second? Tell our listening audience how this work feeds you. What do you get out of doing this?
I can't even imagine doing anything else. It is the most fulfilling profession, really. I get to help people on a daily basis in so many different capacities. I get to help them find love. I get to help them help themselves. I get to help them live healthier lives, through coaching and through psychotherapy and through matchmaking and then through, you know, answering questions and educating people through radio shows like yours, and blogging and, you know, doing workshops and all of that stuff. It gives me so much joy and pleasure to see people living healthier lives. My calling is kind of to be somebody who can encourage people, support people, help people live deeper, more beautiful lives.
Nice.
So I love it.
When a match doesn't work out, is there a part of you that takes that personally, or you just work right through it?
Well, you know, there's always a little bit of disappointment.
Yeah.
I don't take it personally. I just, you know, it's just disappointing to see that something that seemed so hopeful and exciting end, you know. But
yeah.
I'm very sort of, I encourage people to kind of learn from their experiences and think about how they can better themselves and show up in their entirety for their next relationship, being more informed from their previous relationships. So it's all a journey and an opportunity to learn about ourselves and to learn how to, you know, give of ourselves in a greater capacity. So, yeah, so there's a little disappointment there.
I want to remind our listeners that you do, as one of your clients, you have to listen to Dr. Frankie a little bit. She's got some advice for you. There are ways to get kicked out of Dr. Frankie's service, right?
Sort of, yes. I love my clients and I really enjoy helping them be successful in the dating world. But people sometimes have unrealistic expectations, and even I can't always meet their needs.
Right.
So sometimes, very rarely could it, you know, is it not a great match, and they're not taking my service seriously because it's a service for monogamy. It's not a casual service, I should say.
Right. Right.
You know? Yeah.
How have the dating apps affected what it is that you do?
They really haven't. It's so different what I do. What I do is so personalized and customized and private that it's in a world of its own, you know? So it really is separate. It doesn't impact what I do at all.
Nice. Nice. And I went back and listened to some past appearances. We've actually never talked about this. Where did you come up with the name Little Gay Book?
I actually, I got some help.
Okay.
So I was struggling with a name, and I actually had one of my designers help brainstorm with me. And I wanted it to really, at the time, I was working with men too, so I wanted it to be really inclusive, and that's what we came up with together. So it was a collective experience. I also sort of surveyed my friends.
Okay.
And asked them to submit their ideas, and it came out of a lot of different minds working together.
Nice. Are you ready to get to the questions?
I am. I'm super excited. I love your questions.
These are fun. These are fun ones. Now, we're going to start serious. We're going to start with a serious one. This was submitted by Constantly Thinking in Cleveland, and they wrote in, "Dear Dr. Frankie, how do you get over someone who deeply hurt you?"
Yes. It's a good question.
Yeah.
I mean, most of us have had the experience of being deeply hurt, for sure. And I think one way that I find is most helpful is really just diving into oneself, taking really good care of yourself. And it's hard when you feel depressed and down and defeated.
Right.
But what needs to happen is that you need to kind of figure out how to pick yourself up, get to the gym, right? Get to see, you know, make an appointment with a therapist or a coach to help you, you know, just help you think through things, help you learn from the experience, give you some perspective, speak to somebody that's really neutral and not biased, right? Because we love to speak to our friends, but a coach or a therapist is very different from talking about our experiences with a friend. So exercise, eating well, you know, seeking some guidance and support, maybe engaging in some spirituality.
Nice.
You know, whether it be mindfulness, meditation, you know, whatever your religion may be, delving into that a bit. Finding meaning, purpose in your life is really helpful. So really focusing on yourself would be a way to recover from something that's really so deeply painful.
Yeah.
It's a loss, right? When somebody hurts us deeply or we lose something that we love, you go through a grieving process.
And I think that one of the pieces that's so acute in the LGBT community is that because we are a smaller community and in many ways we are more tight-knit, the reminders of that loss in our small friend circles can be ever-present. So that whole idea of divvying up friends is, hey, look, I know that one, you know, and having this be a constant reminder. How do you navigate through that? That's just such a difficult piece.
It's really hard, and I think that people tend to feel like they need to take sides.
Yeah.
And I think people also sometimes forget that there's two sides to every story, and it's hard for them to stay neutral. So, you know, I think that there are always people that we can access, I think, or for them, not always, I shouldn't say always, because some people have a harder time, right, and just relating to people and having interpersonal relationships. But there, if we really dig deep, I think that there are people out there that can be supports to us. And whether it be, you know, attending a support group, if you don't have a good support network yourself, looking up a support group in your area that might fit some of your needs, even like a 12-step program is another way, right, to take care of yourself. There's like every kind of 12-step program available. So, you know, just figuring out how to get support, it's ideal to be able to get support from the community that we already have. But I know when there's a breakup, it's like there's, you know, people start to pick sides. And that's very, very common. So just normalizing that and recognizing that it's not about you. It's just human nature where people feel like they need to choose.
Yeah.
They need to pick. So finding one person even that you can kind of lean on and ask for their help and ask for their support, because people want to help, but they don't necessarily know how much we're struggling.
Right.
Because I think that it's hard for just us as humans to ask for help. And sometimes we appear like we're doing better than we actually are. So it's important to realize that you need to ask for help, and people often who care about us really want to be helpful.
Nice, nice. Well, actually, I'm going to pair that up with another question that's further down the list, but it's an offshoot of this one. One of our listeners wrote in, "Dear Dr. Frankie, what are questions I can ask or signs I can look for that someone is not over their last relationship?"
That's a great one, because I think that definitely comes up more often than we would like to believe. You know, I think when somebody just keeps ruminating about their past partner and keeps talking about situations and things trigger memories frequently, and you feel like you're spending more time processing your new partner's previous relationship, that is a sign, right, of issues that have really not been resolved.
Yeah. That's such a tough one for me personally, just because I think it freaks people out if I mention my ex-husband in a sentence. Now, obviously, it's not something that I talk about on a first date, but it's also not something that I'm in any position to nor want to deny that I had that huge chunk of my life, a third of my life, was spent with somebody else. And I never can maybe figure out how much is too much to talk about it, but then not mentioning it at all just feels really disingenuous.
I agree with you, Ken. I think it's important to be able to talk about somebody that has been very, you know, a significant part of our lives, somebody that's so important to us. There absolutely has to be room for that. And it doesn't mean if you talk about, your ex that you're not over him or her. I think when it becomes an issue is when it just feels like there's a lot of processing going on rather than, you know, sharing about past experiences in a way that seems like it's been resolved. I think that, you know, if there's a lot of emotion and a lot of being triggered by situations in our current relationship that are just bringing up stuff that could be potentially unresolved from our past relationships.
Yeah. And what I hear you saying is that it's totally healthy for me to have a huge dry erase board in my living room that has the current person and my ex-husband with pros and cons, right? Like, that's fine.
Wait.
Is that okay? Is that not right?
Not so much.
Okay. All right. Well, that's something to work on. It's dry erase. I could just erase it. Except I wrote it in Sharpie. But that's okay. That's all right.
Oh, geez.
I know. We got work to do. We got work to do. All right.
Yes.
More questions. Amber wrote in. She asked, can a long-distance relationship really work?
Yes and no. So my feeling about it is that it can temporarily. They get to a point where they're not, if something doesn't happen, if there's not a shift towards coming closer after a certain period of time, you know, people start to get really tired of putting in the work, and it starts to feel like it's not really real, because it's like every time you get together, it's kind of like a fantasy, you know what I mean? It's like you're not living reality together.
Right.
It feels like a vacation every time you're together. So fears start to crop up, like, what's it going to be like if we really were to live together, live in the same city together even? And people start to get nervous about whether that's even possible, and then it feels like there's just so much effort being made to sustain the relationship if, you know, two people don't, you know, if the couple doesn't figure out how to move closer together. And I would say I've seen it work for about 2 years maximum in a healthy way.
And and we should highlight that is an acute issue for the LGBT community, particularly when we're talking about inter-country dating and citizenship laws don't necessarily support this couple being together. So that's a rough one.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, this question came in, and coincidentally, it's something you just posted about, so I think you're ready for this one. Dear Dr. Frankie, age differences, how much is too much?
So the research shows, I think it's 12 years.
Okay.
So 12 years or more, it becomes more challenging because our sort of pop culture references or social references are just not the same. So it's hard to relate, you know. So the music is different, television shows are different, and it just, the gap feels greater.
Yeah.
So 12 or more.
Okay. All right. Now, what about the piece, again, making this one even specific to the LGBT community? I know that a lot of our brothers and sisters feel an added pressure to not be perceived as dating too far from their age just because they feel like they need to present as healthy of a relationship as possible. And so I think that some of our listeners would balk at the idea even of 12 years. Like, oh, I couldn't possibly present that in the same way, you know, my straight coworker could, because I feel the added pressure to present a healthy relationship.
I mean, who's to say that being with somebody with a bigger age gap is unhealthy?
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen many relationships that are really healthy that in the straight and gay community that are more than 12 years.
Yeah. What about that general idea that our LGBT brothers and sisters feel like they have to, you know, present something that's more socially acceptable because there's already a stigma around their relationship?
I think that is decreasing. I don't know what you think, but I think now that we are becoming more accepted and gay marriage is, how many states now offer,
I feel like it's everybody but Ohio at this point, it feels like. So it's not cool, Dr. Frankie, to be living in a state now. I went from Vermont to Ohio.
Oh,
there's only 13 states left, and I'm in one of them.
Oh, no.
That's grounds to move, isn't it?
Well, hopefully there are other things about Ohio that you're liking. I feel like there's less pressure because now we don't have to appear perfect.
Right.
Before, we were under such scrutiny, we had to appear perfect. And now we can, you know, feel like, oh, well, you know what, we're not very different than straight people, right? And how they have their relationships, it's, you know what I mean, we deal with the same struggles. So, and many of the same struggles. So I feel like the pressure is decreased now. The more we're accepted, the more we can be open about our struggles and the difficulties that we experience.
I agree. I agree. All right. Okay. Here's a fun one. This is a fun one. Dear Dr. Frankie, how do you establish whether or not you're actually in a relationship with someone?
You talk about it.
What? That's advocated communication. What are other ways we can do it?
How do you establish that you're in a relationship without communicating about it?
Your answer is too easy. That would be communication. We're not for that, are we?
Well, okay. If we take communication out
No,
of it,
no, no. Communication is good, right? Some would argue that's
so
good.
Important.
Okay.
You know, just ask a simple question like, where are we? Like, what are we doing here? Here's how I feel about what's happening. Here's what I would love to happen, you know, have happen. How do you feel?
Yeah. I feel like people should know that, but the fact that the question came in implies that there's... So what does it mean, okay, that someone posed this question? Doesn't that mean something?
Yes. I'm thinking that, you know, at the core, we are all very fearful of rejection.
Yeah.
So maybe just wondering whether we're in a relationship or not, or what our relationship means, is something that feels safer in some way than actually verbalizing our curiosity about what's happening and expressing what we would like to have happen.
Yeah. So to be clear, Dr. Frankie is pro-communication, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And you know what I really love? They don't just assume that I'm their girlfriend.
They ask you.
Yes.
I love it. I love it. Now, what if she defines that word differently than you do?
Then here we communicate. Here you go. You communicate. Well, what, you know, what does girlfriend mean to you?
Yeah. That's scary. It's scary. I'm nervous about being someone's girlfriend, but that's a whole different set of issues. Yeah, that's a different thing. That's a different thing. Okay, here's another question. It's only four words. Four words. Hate his parents, help.
Hate his parents, help.
Yeah.
That's a difficult one.
Yeah.
Because he didn't pick his parents.
Right.
And you're stuck with his parents. So what I say is, work towards acceptance and interact with them in moderation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would also say, I think one of the things I often see in my friend circles is that this kind of dichotomy where one partner says to the other one, like, oh my gosh, I can't stand my parents, but then gets upset when his partner dislikes his parents. And I just kind of feel like, well, you can't necessarily have it both ways. If you keep denigrating your parents and saying they're horrible to hang out with, I would assume at some point your partner's going to agree with you.
Right, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, they get influenced by that, right?
They
care about you. And if you're expressing repeatedly your unhappiness with your parents, it's going to inevitably influence how your partner thinks and feels about them.
Yeah. There you go. All right, next question. I think they're looking for some validation from you. I don't want to interpret too much. Our PhDs are in very different areas, very different areas. So they wrote, Dear Dr. Frankie, she's technically married. That's okay, right?
Wow. Okay. you know, here we go again with the idea of communication.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is there an agreement? Is there an agreement to having an open marriage? If she's technically married, does her partner know that you are intimate with her?
Right.
If she's married and her partner thinks that this is a monogamous relationship, then no, it's not okay.
Not okay. That's not a good recipe.
No.
Okay. All right. Now, I had three different people write in about ghosting. I am obsessed with ghosting. Do you know about ghosting?
Oh, my gosh, I don't. And I'm so excited right now that I'm going to learn something new.
I'm going to forward you the article. Everybody, if you just Google ghosting, this Huffington Post piece is going to come up. It's called Ghosting, the 21st Century Dating Problem Everyone Talks About, But No One Knows How to Deal With. Okay? I'm going to actually read the – I know. It's so exciting, except if you are someone who's been ghosted, as I have been, Dr. Frankie, three times over the past year. I know. I will read the first paragraph because it's essentially me. After 3 months of dating, 23-year-old Michael was optimistic about his relationship with Linda. They were together often, and he'd even met her parents. One night at dinner, the "where is this going" conversation came up. Michael and Linda mutually agreed that they wanted to move forward in the relationship. He dropped her off at home, kissed her goodnight, and never heard from her again. After his attempts to reach her went unanswered, Michael put on his cute guy hat and delivered Linda's favorite cupcakes to her office, only to find out his name had been removed from the guest list at the gate. He's been ghosted. They define it as the term ghosting, sometimes known as the slow fade, refers to the anecdotally pervasive act where one dater ends a relationship by simply disappearing. But they still have like this presence on social media, so you can kind of see that they're out there, but you've been ghosted. 3 times in the past, say, year and a half, I have been ghosted, where everything was fine, everything was moving forward, and then they just disappear. It's like a thing.
Ooh, creepy.
Right?
Yeah, that's creepy.
What do we do about this? I mean, I'm telling you, it is the craziest thing where everything is just fine. And you can kind of see them on social media, which people should go back and listen to Dr. Frankie and Ken talking previously. You should not be friending them after a first date.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
No. Yeah.
But what, I guess there's a couple questions here. I mean, one, let's talk about Michael. How do you work through? Do you just let go of Linda? How do you work through that? And then we'll talk about Linda in a second, because I feel like she's got some issues as well.
I mean, maybe that is when it becomes more intimate and people have a really hard time with intimacy. And it's just easier to disappear, to evaporate, to become a ghost.
Yeah.
Right, but you can't really become a ghost now because we have social media, so you can see what we're doing. But years ago, right, you could disappear and then you'd really disappear. But now I think it's more painful because you can see what they're doing out there.
Yeah.
But I imagine when the relationship starts to progress, like meeting the in-law, like meeting the parents, you know. And this is, you know, an individual who struggles with intimacy and closeness, then they, you know, get into this category, I can't believe I haven't heard of it, of ghosting.
Yeah. Oh, you're gonna read this article and you're gonna be like, oh, I gotta go fly out and hug Ken. It's happened three times. It's crazy. It's crazy. They just disappear. And I didn't I'm sure you hear this phrase all the time, and so know that I have some self-awareness as I speak. Do you not hear the phrase all the time? I didn't do anything wrong.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, I think people have a hard time rejecting people. It's hard to be rejected, but it's also hard to reject. So when you're dating, you're evaluating each other. You're sort of seeing if this works for you. And sometimes you decide that it doesn't, and it's too hard to be honest with the person about why it really doesn't work for you.
Right.
And they just disappear. Or out of nowhere, they just say that they're not happy. It's not working for them, and they don't give you anything tangible to really wrap your mind around.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm actually, with comparison to that last statement and ghosting, I'll take that one where they're like, I'm out, I'm not interested. That would be something. The lack of communication is nutty. And by the way, this is not like a let's help Ken thing. I hear this constantly from folks.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this is also a result of us being so kind of detached emotionally because of all the ways in which we communicate, and we communicate so much now, but it's empty communication. You know, nobody handwrites anything anymore. We rarely pick up the phone to speak. We're texting, we're emailing, we're tweeting, you know. So I just think it's like the intimacy, like the closeness, the, you know, having it feel real isn't there anymore.
Right.
There's so much distance between the communication, between the two people, because of the way that we interface today. I think it's made it okay in some way to treat each other this way, which is so wrong.
Yeah.
You know?
Can we say that Little Gay Book has a no ghosting policy?
Yes, I am completely opposed to treating anyone like that.
So what advice would you give to the Lindas of the world who obviously are out, you know, they're out of the relationship, they're just not interested anymore, but something is preventing them from having that conversation. What would you say to the Lindas of the world, or the three guys that I'll give you their numbers afterwards to call who did this, what would you tell them in order to work through that and actually say something?
Pick up the phone and just pick up the phone. And if you can't see the person face to face, which I know can be really difficult,
right?
Pick up the phone and at least have a conversation, and give that person that you spent time with and that you were intimate with this space to express their disappointment after you let them know that it's not working for you. And, you know, if it's something that you feel too uncomfortable sharing specifically with that person, because sometimes that happens, right? You don't really want to hurt somebody too terribly.
Right.
So you don't want to tell them the truth. So then just say, this isn't working for me. It doesn't feel like the right fit for me. And I just, all I can say just isn't working for me. And I, you know, and I'm sorry. I'm that kind of, just be compassionate.
Yeah.
We're all human, right? We all want to be understood. We want to be loved. We want to be handled with care, and give them the opportunity to express their sadness.
Yeah.
Like, don't cut them off in that conversation. Don't prematurely end the conversation. Give them space to express their disappointment and sadness, even if it's extremely uncomfortable to sit with it.
Yeah.
Because you owe that to them.
Indeed. Indeed. This is why she has a PsyD and my PhD is in useless stuff. There we go. There we go. Now, I have to say, as an individual, which you are, you know, I would imagine any number of times people want to know about your personal life, and you've been very open about your personal life, because I would assume people are like, well, what kind of relationship are you in? Because I want you to model success for me. And one of the things that I love about you is that you are open, that you, as it turns out, are a human who has struggles as well.
Absolutely, I do. And I am open about my life. I really, I feel like my experiences inform my work, and
yeah.
I'm able to help people through my own experience, not just, you know, my experience of working with my clients and my education, but just my own personal struggle. I've been separated for a year, and I was with my partner for 12 years. So this year has been a really interesting, challenging year for me, just trying to figure out how to co-parent. You know, she's moved on. She's dating somebody. Figuring out, you know, and actually right now she's in the process of, you know, introducing this person to my kids.
Mm.
So there's, you know, I am now experiencing for the first time this sort of situation, and it's giving me such great perspective, and I feel like I can help my clients, you know, better
yeah.
Navigate it in the future for sure. But yeah, so I'm, I'm a year out, and there are ups and downs, and I can say it's not easy. It's not easy when you have a love that you have for many, many years, and you have children with that person, and you have to end it because it's not working. But there's still I just cared so deeply for her. So
yeah.
it's an adjustment for sure.
A year ago, you had a Facebook post about this. You know, you put this out there. Did you pause at all before you did that? Like, what went into you sharing with really the world, hey, this is what's going on with me. This is part of my work.
Yes, I did, because there was a part of me that felt like I was going to disappoint my fans and my followers and my clients and so on. I think that people really looked up to me, and they thought I was a role model. So I feared that I would disappoint them, because
yeah.
they would see that actually I too am imperfect and struggle in some of the same ways that they do. And I just felt like I needed to be very authentic, honest, and open with my clients, because that is what I encourage them to do on a daily basis. And I had to do it. I couldn't keep it from them, but I can't say that it didn't give me pause.
Yeah. And I already know the answer to this one, but I want our listeners to hear it from you. Tell everyone what happens when you're open and authentic, because look at the response that you got.
It was amazing. So much love came pouring in. I was shocked. I got the most beautiful emails, phone calls. I mean, I even got flowers. I was so touched. I felt so held, and I'm so happy I did it, because I felt there were times when I felt really alone.
Yeah.
And I was scared that I would just, like I said, that I would really disappoint the community, and it was the opposite. I haven't heard one person say that they're disappointed in the fact that I am now separated, and not one person.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Now, I do know, hopefully I'm not letting the cat out of the bag here, that you are headed to the Dyna this year.
I am.
Is it your first time going?
Yes, it's my first time going.
Well, then you can't offer tips for other people, but I was going to say, I mean, I would imagine that if I were a lesbian, and when I wake up in the morning, I often do imagine that it would be very overwhelming there at the Dyna.
You know what? That's my fear, and I think that's what has kept me away for so many years. But I feel like I can't be a lesbian and never have experienced the Dyna.
Right.
you know, so I just need to go and do it. And I I think it's going to be a lot of fun to just be around that much energy and excitement. And I don't think that I have been around that environment since probably spring break in high school.
Nice. Well, that was only 2 years ago, though.
Right. So. I wish. Oh, my gosh.
All right. Well, last question for you, because this is one of my favorite things for you to dish on. Give us a do, give us a don't. I love when we even talk about speed dating, because you have the best stories about someone who did it really well, but then it's also entertaining someone who really didn't do it very well.
So you know what I keep hearing, and it's endless. I keep hearing it again and again about, you know, people putting up the wrong, like just lying on their profiles online, with using photos that are inaccurate, that are 10 years old, writing narratives that aren't accurate either. Just be real. Just be honest. Be who you are. Show up, you know, with truth and honesty. Because what happens is you set yourself up for rejection if you show up in any other way. So that's the first, definitely something that sort of I feel frustrated with, because it's such a no-brainer in my mind, but people keep doing it. I don't really understand that.
Yeah.
And then, let's see, and taking things slow. It's really exciting when there's chemistry and you meet somebody finally that you're thinking could be the real deal and you could see yourself with this person for a long time. Take it slow, because when we jump into it and we dive in head first, oftentimes that puts out the fire.
Yeah.
So, and I've certainly been there, so I know how hard it is to resist the urge, but if you can really try your hardest to do that, it'll stretch out that period of excitement, which you really want to do, right? Because you don't get it back.
Right.
That's another little bit of advice.
Is there a part of you that's maybe even a little bit incredulous that you have to tell people over and over, I need you to communicate and I need you to be honest?
You know, I get it. You know, I think that it's hard for us to be vulnerable, and,
yeah.
and being honest means that we're being vulnerable, and, you know, we're afraid of getting hurt, and now we're just talking about how we're hurting each other
right.
more now than ever, because communication is just not what it needs to be. So I think that people are being less authentic, and less care is happening.
Yeah.
And I think that people are becoming more guarded, and it's harder for them to be honest and real at this point.
Absolutely.
If we can each work on that, I think it can just help ground us and help hold on to all, you know, hold on to that potential, the realness, the authenticity, the real intimacy that we're all searching for. We want it so badly. We have to fight against what's happening with, you know, all this technology that's pulling us away from it, really.
Nice. All right, folks, the website is littlegaybook.com. They have services in the San Francisco Bay Area and Los Angeles, in New York, in Hawaii, and a new Cleveland office coming up soon, I assume. That's what we're working on. They also have a no ghosting policy right there,
yes.
littlegaybook.com. Dr. Frankie, I mean, you can't possibly need me to tell you how much I adore you, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Thank you so, so much. This is so fun. I love all the questions that your listeners submit, and I love being a guest on your show. So I look forward to being invited on again, and hopefully it won't be in a year and a half.
Indeed. All right. Well, you have fun at the diner.
All right. Thank you. Next year, you're going to have to join me.
You have fun at the diner.
Come on. You're going to miss out.
Guess I wasn't the best one. Me, myself, with my face pressed up against love's glass, to see the shiny toy I've been hoping for, the one I never can afford. The wide world spins and spits turmoil, and the nations toil for peace. The paws of fear upon your chest, only love can soothe that beast. And my words are paper tigers, no match for the predator of pain inside her. I say, love, come to you, hoping just.
folks, and we are back. Well, we have tons of time left on this week's episode to go over all of the latest LGBT news that you should know as you finish out your week or start a new week. But first, a little bit of a pause. It is indeed episode number 299, and that means next week is episode number 300. I can barely wrap my mind around that. When the original Becca and I started the show back in 2008 in Brattleboro, Vermont on WVEW, we were a live show Wednesday nights from 9 to 10 p.m. That's what we did. We went in the studio, WVEW. You can still hear us on WVEW. Shout out to everybody listening in the Brattleboro, Vermont area. I feel like our goal was to make it to maybe 30 shows. 40 would have been pushing it, and then we hit 100, and that was crazy, and just kept on going, and here we are. Now I'm in Cleveland, Ohio, and next week is episode number 300. So thankful to all of you for all of your support. Our guest next week, Jim J. Bullock. I love Jim J. Bullock. He is just one of my favorite people on this planet. He's such an amazing guy. You know him from Too Close for Comfort, that incredible 80s sitcom. He was the center square on Hollywood Squares for so long. He had a very short-lived but quite fascinating talk show with Tammy Faye Baker. He has just been living his life so authentically and out and open for so many years, and always has been a huge inspiration of mine. And my gosh, the wit on that guy. If you've listened before, you know that I am quite the game show enthusiast, and he has been on pretty much every single game show, and we're going to talk to him about that. So not only Jim J. Bullock, though, we also will have special appearances from my mom. My mom's going to be on the show, and somebody else who we promised 3 months ago on the air that she could make an appearance on episode 300. So I'm going to be cold calling her, and it's going to be hilarious, and that one's a special treat. Special treat. But first, we're still in episode 299. Stop talking about episode 300. We're not there yet. So let's talk about some of the LGBT news that's out there. Three anti-gay bills have died in the West Virginia legislature with the end of the session. Lawmakers closed their 2015 legislative session Saturday at midnight without passing two bills that would have permitted businesses to discriminate against customers under the guise of religious freedom, and one that would have prohibited cities and counties from enacting or enforcing LGBT-inclusive anti-discrimination laws. The Religious Freedoms Bill, one introduced in the House of Delegates and the other in the Senate, saw no action beyond being referred to committee. The bill on city and county anti-discrimination laws got a first reading in the House in February, but was sent back to a committee, which delayed action on it indefinitely. So this is good news. It's good news out of West Virginia. It's kind of the absence of bad news, but that's still kind of good news. Fairness West Virginia Executive Director Andrew Schneider said, quote, "With the help of fair-minded legislators in both chambers and both parties, along with thousands of LGBT advocates and allies, we successfully fought off attempts to dismantle equality in the Mountain State." So there you go. Good news in West Virginia. They are not advancing discrimination. There you go. In Missouri, it's a little bit of a different story. In the midst of a hotly debated string of U.S. bills aimed at keeping trans people out of public and school bathrooms that match their authentic genders, two proposed Missouri laws take a different approach, prohibiting the creation of gender-neutral facilities. Republican State Representative Jeff Pogue filed two bills this week that attempt to ensure a similar result as recent proposed laws in several states barring men and women from sharing restroom space. This is reported by the St. Louis LGBT news site Boom. Bills in Florida and Texas would outlaw a citizen from using a public bathroom that did not accord with the gender assigned to them at birth, and bills in Kentucky, Minnesota, and Texas seek to do the same in schools. Well, Missouri's bill is a little bit different. This is a little bit more, I think, insidious in a way. It would require all public restrooms that were not single occupancy to be gender divided, while another bill would disallow state revenue to be used towards creating a gender neutral environment unless required by a federal or state court order. These bills have been decried by Missouri LGBT group Promo as a way to, quote, create false fear of trans people. So this is Missouri being proactive they're trying to be proactive in not allowing any type of gender equality here. So that's more than a bit of a bummer. More than a bit of a bummer there in Missouri. Now, also in trans news, in a first-of-its-kind decision, a federal court ruled this week that the Affordable Care Act, which many people call Obamacare, including President Obama, I read how he loves that it's called Obamacare, even though it was originally described as Obamacare as an insult to him, but he loves it. He loves it. Well, a federal court ruled this week that Obamacare prohibits discrimination against patients based on their gender identity. The decision clarified that healthcare providers and hospitals accepting federal Medicare or Medicaid funds are subject to the prohibition of discrimination based on sex, which extends to transgender individuals. This interpretation is akin to recent federal decisions on Title IX protections for trans students and Title VII protections for trans employees. The ruling was handed down in a federal lawsuit, Rumble versus Fairview Health Services, which was filed last June by Minnesota's Gender Justice on behalf of a young trans man who claimed his Minnesota hospital allegedly misgendered, ridiculed, gave careless and assaultive exams, and generally provided him substandard care because of his trans identity. His lawsuit states that he faced such treatment for 6 days following an emergency room visit for pain. While the hospital then argued that anti-trans bias is not prohibited, the lawsuit found, no, this is not something that you can do. This is quite a victory for our trans brothers and sisters, and indeed for our whole community. So good news out of the court system. Let's switch back to the other side and go to Alabama. Now, often on the show, I feel like sometimes we throw out quotes from obscure state senators or chairs of the Texas Republican Party, who these are important people, but they're maybe not at the total forefront of creating policy in their states. Not so in this week's story from Alabama, where we get a quote from the governor of Alabama, Robert Bentley. As the battle over marriage equality continues in Alabama, the state has submitted a friend of the court brief in the upcoming U.S. Supreme Court case, making the tired and unfounded argument, and here we go, folks, from the Alabama governor, that same-sex marriage harms children. We are still at the point where we are saying that same-sex marriage harms children. The brief, which was submitted this week by lawyers for Governor Robert Bentley, said marriage is a natural reality and that same-sex marriage destroys, I kid you not, quote, destroys the rights of children to be connected to their biological parents. This echoes the arguments the state made in defending its ban on same-sex marriage in federal court, where U.S. District Judge Kelly Grenade was unconvinced and struck down the ban in 2 January rulings. These rulings allowed same-sex couples to begin marrying in Alabama in February, but the state Supreme Court halted those marriages early in March. The state's high court contends that federal courts have no say over Alabama's laws and issued an order on March 3rd that county probate judges who handle marriage licenses in Alabama, they should cease granting them to same-sex couples. This is all that Alabama Chief Justice Roy Moore, who has always been a vocal opponent of marriage equality, he recused himself from that order, but he's still embroiled in the fight. He has been advising probate judges. This is the landscape in Alabama. This is Alabama Chief Justice Roy Moore. He's been advising probate judges not to comply, and he's even being sued over that by couples who were denied marriage licenses in Mobile County. But yeah, here is their friend of the court brief that, quote, marriage is a natural reality and same-sex marriage destroys the rights of children to be connected to their biological parents. That is from Alabama Governor Robert Bentley. Crazy. Crazy that's coming from the governor. If you live in Alabama, that's got to be rough. That's got to be rough. In South Carolina, states' rights proponents in the South Carolina Senate approved a plan this week to join a call for a convention to amend the U.S. Constitution to rein in federal spending and, of course, to outlaw same-sex marriage. A Senate subcommittee gave its blessing to 3 bills following a far-ranging discussion by senators fed up with what they see as out-of-control federal government. The bills would call for convening a convention, under Article 5 of the Constitution to propose amendments, including requiring a balanced budget and defining marriage as between one man and one woman. Just for a little civics lesson, under Article 5, 34 states must pass resolutions calling for a convention, and amendments would have to be ratified by 38 states. The Constitution has been amended 27 times for our history lesson since 1789, and the last time was in 1992. All have been adopted by Congress rather than by a convention and ratified by the states. So it's never gone through a convention. Senator Shane Massey, who is a Republican there in South Carolina, said this, quote, "Marriage is one man and one woman, and I believe that's the way it's been in the history of mankind up until the last 15 years. So yes, in South Carolina, that's how they're spending their time. They would like a constitutional convention to ban marriage equality. Not a great use of their time, but still, that's the direction they're going. Senator Ted Cruz, Republican from Texas, he said that court rulings upholding marriage equality are, quote, a real danger to our liberty. A real danger to our liberty. And by that he means straight people's liberty. So straight allies, those of you listening, apparently marriage equality is a real danger to your liberty. So says Senator Ted Cruz this week in a radio interview. He told WHO radio host Jan Mikkelsen that he plans to introduce a constitutional amendment. God, we're just kind of getting all giddy with these constitutional amendments. He wants to introduce a constitutional amendment to allow states to ban same-sex marriage. He said this, quote, "We have seen judges, and especially the Supreme Court, ignoring the law. If the courts were following the Constitution, we shouldn't need a new amendment, but they are, as you put it quite rightly, making it up right now, and it's a real danger to our liberty." I have said this before on this show, and I would like to say it again. It is so problematic to me that a United States senator is misinterpreting what it is that the Supreme Court does. That he would put out there in a quote that the Supreme Court is ignoring the law and instead, I guess, seemingly doesn't understand that the role of the Supreme Court is to interpret the law. And if they see laws by the states as violating the U.S. Constitution, that's actually what the Supreme Court does. They're supposed to step in and say, so we are experts on the Constitution and interpreting the Constitution, and we were appointed by the President and ratified by the Senate and ratified by the House of Representatives. We have now interpreted this law as being not in line with what our Constitution says. That's our checks and balances. So these senators and these governors and these representatives who stand up and say, that is not the role of the Supreme Court, that's exactly the role of the Supreme Court. That's actually what they do. Actually what they do. So crazy to me that a United States Senator, Senator Ted Cruz, seems to misunderstand that this is what the Supreme Court is supposed to do. Now, if he had said the Supreme Court is making laws and the Supreme Court was actually making laws, I would be the first to say that's not what the Supreme Court does. Now, they effectively have influence over laws, but that's only because they're interpreting cases that are brought before them. The Supreme Court is not out on some street corner in Texas trying to drum up cases. These are cases that are brought to them. Let's please interpret what the Supreme Court does correctly. Please, please. In Oklahoma, oh my gosh, I love this one. Oklahoma Democratic State Representative Emily Virgin wants Christian businesses to post a public notice of discrimination if they intend to claim that they have a religious right to refuse service to LGBT people. State Representative Chuck Strom, he introduced a bill called the Oklahoma Religious Freedom Act. It was introduced earlier this year, and it would allow businesses, it's another one of these, like wedding cake bakers and photographers, to deny services if it was, quote, against the person's religious beliefs. State Senator Joseph Silk introduced a similar bill in the Oklahoma Senate. He told the New York Times recently that new laws were necessary because the LGBT movement was, quote, challenging religious liberties and the freedom to live out religious convictions. So, Oklahoma Democratic State Representative Emily Virgin has the perfect solution. She introduced an amendment last week that will require religious businesses to come out of the closet. The amendment states this quote, "Any person not wanting to participate in any of the activities set forth in subsection A of this section based on sexual orientation, gender identity, or race of either party to the marriage shall post notice of such refusal in a manner clearly visible to the public in all places of business, including websites. The notice may refer to the person's religious beliefs, but shall state specifically which couples the business does not serve by referring to a refusal based upon sexual orientation, gender identity, or race." I love this. The Freedom Oklahoma Executive Director, Troy Stevenson, said in a statement, quote, "Thank you to Representative Virgin for calling out the level of segregation allowed under this legislation. If the state of Oklahoma is going to protect discrimination, then at the very least, businesses should be required to own their bias and post it publicly for the world to see." Ryan Kiesel, who's the director of the ACLU of Oklahoma, also praised Virgin's amendment, saying that it, quote, "very pointedly exposes the absurdity of creating a new era of legalized segregation." So we will see where this ends up, but that is very clever. Oklahoma Democratic State Representative Emily Virgin proposing an amendment that says, hey, fine, you can discriminate. You can blatantly discriminate, but put it on your website and put it in your window that this is a place of business that is discriminating for this reason. Own it. Own it, my friends. Own it. I'm all for that. So many other stories out there that we're not even going to get near. In Switzerland, the Swiss Parliament last week passed legislation aimed at protecting the country's LGBT community from discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity. The bill seeks to amend a non-discrimination law that protected citizens on the basis of race and religion. A subcommittee in the Parliament's lower house recently approved marriage equality legislation. So there in Switzerland, there's a lot happening there to protect the LGBT community. So that's exciting. In Arkansas, I mean, again, there's good news out there, even in Arkansas. Arkansas State Representative Greg Leding, a Democrat, he introduced a bill last week to expand the state's anti-discrimination protections to include sexual orientation and gender identity. That's exciting in Arkansas. Even in Texas, even as Senator Ted Cruz is putting out statements indicating that he maybe doesn't understand what the Supreme Court does, in Texas, an openly gay state lawmaker in Texas introduced a bill that would outlaw conversion therapy on minors. So conversion therapy, a huge issue. There's a bill in Texas that would ban that. And the big news of the week on the conversion therapy front, Washington, D.C. last week became the third jurisdiction in the country to enact a ban on conversion therapy for minors. The law passed a congressional review last week after being signed by former Mayor Vincent Gray in December. So Congress has now approved a conversion therapy ban there in Washington, D.C. There's a lot of work that needs to be done on this conversion therapy front. There are still so many folks out there that are putting forward the sentiment that the LGBT community is so close to victory because there are only 13 states left that don't have marriage equality. And this is all just another reminder that marriage equality is not the only issue out there. There are only three places in this country, California, New Jersey, and now Washington, D.C., that have banned conversion therapy. And there are other municipalities out there that are considering it, but they're not quite there. So minors are still being subjected to conversion therapy all over this country, and it's totally sanctioned. And this has nothing to do with marriage equality. And so please do not say when you are talking to people, we're almost there, we're almost at victory. And it's not like I'm not for marriage equality, I'm all for marriage equality. But there are other issues out there that we have to pay attention to. And my biggest fear is that if all 50 states approve marriage equality, that everyone will become complacent. And we won't still be fighting for trans inclusion, which we desperately need, for a ban on conversion therapy, which we desperately need, to get rid of laws which are in so many states that bar LGBT individuals from adoption rights. from hospital visitation rights. This is not meant to depress you. Here at the end of episode 299, it is more to say that there is more work to be done, and that's why we're going to keep doing this show. Heck, we got episode 300 just next week. Jim J. Bullock, my mom, and another special guest. Very exciting. Very exciting. We must thank Dr. Frankie. We love Dr. Frankie. We will, of course, have her back very, very soon. We will get your questions at any point. You can send your Dr. Frankie questions to ken@thisshowisogay.com. We'll get her back on the show, and we will get you some relationship help, because that's what we're here to do. We're here to help. We're here to entertain. We're here to hang out with you guys. Thank you, as always, for listening. Please, please tune in next week, episode 300. In the meantime, get out there. And while you're out there making a difference, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
I'm trying to tell you something about my life. Maybe give me insight between black and white. The best thing you ever done for me is to help me take my life less seriously. It's only life after all. Yeah. Well, darkness has a hunger that's insatiable, and lightness has a call that's hard to hear. And I wrap my fear around me like a blanket. I sail my ship of safety till I sank it. I'm crawling on your shores. I went to the doctor. I went to the mountains. I looked to the children. I drank from the fountains. There's more than one answer to these questions, pointing me in a crooked line. And the less I seek my source for some definitive, closer I am to find, yeah. Closer I am to find, yeah. And I went to see the doctor of philosophy with a poster of Rasputin and a beer down to his knee. He never did marry or see a B-grade movie. He graded my performance. He said he could sit through me. I spent 4 years prostrate to the higher mind. Got my paper and I was free. I went to the doctor. I went to the mountains. I looked to the children. I drank from the fountains. There's more than one answer to these questions, pointing me in a crooked line. And the less I seek my source, more I've been in it. Close.